What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Before the show begins, I want to ask you a very important question. Do you want to save someone's life? I know that's a very dramatic way to start things off, but trust me, you can help one of the 14,000 patients who need a bone marrow transplant and can't get it from a family member. 70% of those people in need will never get a bone marrow transplant, but you can be the one to change that. Register today to become a lifesaver, because the chances of saving someone is one of the most exciting and selfless things a person could do. Trust me, I know. I did it in 2011, I want to say, and I became a donor and it changed my life, because someone was able to be saved because of me. So text AMAZING to 5055 or go to dkms.org/100words for a free swab kit. Message and data rates may apply, obviously. But listen, if I can save a life, so can you. This is a serious thing. Go and do it. It'll take 10 seconds of your time and you can save someone's life. All right, now here's the show. Hey team, that's a new intro, right? I'm Ray Harkins, and you're listening to a podcast called 100 Words or Less, in which we talk to people in and around the independent music scene, whether that be punk, hardcore, indie rock, emo, you name it. I probably have spoken to them, because, you know, realistically, the show's been around for 4+ years. And if I haven't spoken to someone you are even remotely interested in, you're not listening to very much music. So anyways, I thank you for joining us. And if you're listening for the first time, welcome. If you're listening to this for the 100 millionth time, well, not 100 millionth, but maybe, you know, 218th time, for those of you that have listened to since episode one, you can see the evolution of the show. And I feel like, you know, we should be hanging out and having dinner and talking about that. But anyways, the guest this week is Luke Pate. He is the vocalist for a band called Frameworks, who are a very, very good band from Gainesville, Florida. And yeah, I'll be frank. I got pitched this conversation from a very close friend, and I was like, you know what? Like, I don't know too much about Frameworks. I've obviously heard the name and I've listened to their music, but I didn't know too much about this. But I was excited, because basically we had a really in-depth conversation on a scene that I hold very high esteem for me, the Gainesville, Florida scene, because I've only spent maybe a week worth of time there. But it just, I don't know, it perplexes me. The scene's incredible, because obviously it's birthed so many incredible things to the world, from, you know, obviously Hot Water Music, No Idea Records, and then obviously there was the whole sort of, you know, even though these bands specifically didn't come from Gainesville, but like, you know, Reversal of Man, Asuk, like, there's so many a wide range of bands. Against Me is another one. I mean, I could just go on, but anyways, we had a very long conversation about that, and I was excited about that, and Luke was ready to dig into that. But I got to talk to you about two more things before we dive into the conversation with Luke. One of them is this may sound strange to some of you, but I promise you should look into it, because it was a very enlightening, mind expanding, whatever you want to call an experience that kind of puts you out of your body. So a float tank, have you guys ever heard of that? No? Well, okay, here, let me educate you. Basically, what you do is you get into a sensory deprivation tank, which basically means it's completely black. They have some water in there that is will buoy you and make you float, because there's a lot of salt and Epsom salts. And so basically, you just kind of float around in this thing, this tank, this sensory deprivation chamber. You put earplugs in and you sit there for an hour. And it was, at times it was challenging, because basically you have to quiet your mind. You have to not be, you know, thinking about a million things, because you'll honestly just go crazy and the time will go by extremely, extremely slow. So it took me about 20 minutes to kind of calm down. And when I say calm down, I wasn't like freaking out in there by like claustrophobia or anything, but just, you know, calming all of these racing thoughts that we have on a daily basis, and to basically pay attention to my breath, pay attention to how my body felt. And by the time that I was done with it, it was like, I felt like I was floating. I felt like I had like, you know, maybe an inch or two underneath my feet the rest of the day. And honestly, that feeling kind of ellipsed over into the next day as well. And so if you're interested in any of that, please email me 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. We can talk about it a little bit more. And it was just an incredible experience. And I urge you, if you even have a remote fascination with it, Google it. You'll be able to find some places probably near you that do it, because this is quite a popular emerging business for a lot of people. So it was a good experience. And I'm moving. So I'm going to be, the show is going on as scheduled. Don't worry, you will be getting your free content every week. But I'll be moving and I'll be traveling next week. Next week I'm in Portland. And it's going to be busy times. But, moving on up, moving on to a little bit bigger house. Going to do some beautiful remodeling and, all the suburban home stuff that Descendants sing about. That's the life that I'm living. And I'm excited about that. So anyways, so like I said, Luke and I really, really dig into Gainesville and Florida, and basically how the band approaches the sort of notoriety that they've gotten so far. And to be clear, they're not a big band. You know, they are a smaller to mid-level size band that can, you know, play to 100 plus people a night in most major markets. And, you know, they're on the grind. They're hustling. But they never anticipated anybody paying attention to anything of what they were doing, let alone put some releases out on cool labels like Top Shelf and the most recent release on Deathwish. So yeah, here is my talk with Luke, and I will talk to you after the episode is over. But I usually start these things off with just my own personal kind of entry point to, you know, you, your band, and all that sort of stuff. I became clued into you guys via JP from Rescuer, because I did some work for No Sleep Records for a while, and obviously we put out that last LP of theirs. Does he still play with you, or was that just kind of a sort of side thing that he was doing?
He just toured with us. He never played. He doesn't really play very much. I guess Rescuer was the main thing he did. Okay. But he just came on tour with us a few times.
Got it. Okay, that's because, yeah, he was like, yo, these guys are sick, you should check them out. And I was like, yeah, you guys, I was like, I liked what you were doing. The label, it didn't make sense for you guys, just because we had a lot of stuff that existed within that same ecosystem. Yeah. But it was one of those things. I was, I'm always, always interested in bands from Florida, because I find it so, the community is so insular, because obviously you guys are, you know, kind of detached in the same way that, like, you know, at one point, obviously, like Seattle was, where it was like, well, bands don't tour through there unless they're like really trying to like do a full US or whatever.
I was actually just listening to your podcast with Lennon about the same thing, sort of.
Oh yeah, dude, for sure. It's like anytime, especially if you are closer to, you know, where, like obviously where you are in South Florida, I just find it so interesting. So it's like, is that representative of your experience, or is it one of those things where you kind of just don't even think about it anymore?
Well, we're from Gainesville, so Georgia and Atlanta are like 2 to 5 hours away. But South Florida, that's like a whole nother beast. Actually, our drummer is from South Florida, which sort of around where Lennon is. So it's like I think he's like 6 hours from us, which is like almost 10 hours from Atlanta or any other conventional place that you would probably go.
Right. Another planet.
Yeah.
And so is it, so, I mean, like you said, obviously because you're, you know, a little more northerly located, you feel more connected, but at the same time, Gainesville is such a large music scene because obviously the lineage of No Idea Records and Hot Water Music and all that stuff. And obviously since the fest has, you know, brought even more of a spotlight to that scene. When you first started to go to shows in that general area, did you feel that there was something kind of special, or did it feel just kind of like, wow, this is really cool that I tripped on this?
Well, I mean, most of us in Frameworks, we grew up in Gainesville. Actually, yeah, three of us did. So we kind of grew up into it. And I'd say that we'd always appreciated what Gainesville was, but we didn't really appreciate it until we left Gainesville and started touring. You start to realize the small nuances that maybe, I guess a good example is like on our first tour, we realized that it's not the same mindset for other people in smaller cities about the size of Gainesville, that they should probably give most of the door of the not greatly attended show to the touring band instead of splitting it evenly or fairly. That's like a small example that's just something we grew up with. And I don't know, I think that's sort of weird. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just getting tangled here.
No, it's fine. Well, that's the beauty of a podcast, you know? It's a bunch of rambles, hopefully tied in together to where it makes some sense.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I think my first experience with Gainesville was I never played there with the band that I played in, but we always just kind of went around it. I don't know why we never played it, but I went to the fest in 2003 or something like that, and the band that I was tour managing was on tour with Hot Water Music. So it was one of those things where we got to see, obviously, just how big of a thing that Hot Water Music was there, where it's like, you know, they're obviously punk rock royalty. But then I was so struck by the obviously the college town in general, mixed with this obviously like sort of, you know, new age hippie protester vibe. It was just like, you know, you had the Florida Gators and then you had everybody else that was, you know, I guess kind of against that idea. When did you kind of recognize that that sort of dichotomy with the city?
When I started going to Fest, actually, because Fest is scheduled on the rival UF football team. So it's scheduled the weekend that everybody who goes to UF and cares about sports leaves town. And when I started realizing that nobody was there for Fest, I was like, oh, well, that's where everybody is. So it's kind of just split in the middle between downtown and midtown, almost like an outsiders kind of thing, where you have like the people that would appreciate Fest downtown, and then you have people who have no clue what Fest is because they're not even in town when it happens in midtown, and they just don't intermingle really. It's very strange.
Right. No, that's true. I never. So is it intentionally done that every year?
I've never talked to Tony about it, but I believe so. It makes sense because, I mean, just bringing in that many different people,
right,
different perspectives into. Yeah. I mean, I can just genuinely say that most of those people that go to Midtown, where they're just some of the worst people. I work at a bar downtown and sometimes they'll like migrate over and they're like the people you have like the worst problems with.
Right.
So putting those two personalities together on like a weekend of Fest would be bad.
Right. Right. No, that's it. I mean, it makes sense. Like you saying, it never would have immediately occurred to me because, you know, us people involved in independent music, you know, we plan well, but then at the same time, we're not thinking of those things in those terms. And so I'm glad that Tony's thinking of it.
I mean, it might have happened maybe 7 or 8 years in when he's like, oh, wait, we could just do it now.
Right.
Make that happen. But I feel like it was always around Halloween.
Right.
I mean, I don't know everything about Fest or really even that much.
Right. No, no, no. But yeah, I see what you're saying. Maybe it was an accident initially and all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, this works. So let's keep doing it. So you mentioned you were raised in Gainesville. Were you actually born there or did you migrate there?
I grew up in Newberry. It's about maybe 35, 45 minutes away from Gainesville. but it's such a small town. It's like a small town into a small town into Gainesville that I just called it Gainesville. With all the frameworks, we've always just called it Gainesville. Because, I mean, it's not like anybody's going to play a show or announce that they're from, like, a city, a couple thousand, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, or you obviously have the bands that, you know, you maybe have an idea to do that initially where you're like, oh, yeah, we're from this, you know, suburb of a large city. And then most people, actually 99% of the people will probably ask you where it's like, wait, what do you mean? And you're like, well, it's like 45 minutes outside Gainesville. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't imagine which would be more annoying. Either people asking where that is every time or saying, oh, so you guys are from where Hotmutter Music is from. Right. Both of those, I cleared this. Oh, my goodness.
It's that. It's okay. You got a pup?
Two cats. My girlfriend has a cat. And then she found this kitten like a week ago.
Nice.
It just ran out to her, and it's like 2 weeks old, so it's not... shouldn't be here, but she couldn't leave it. So
of course you're doing the right thing.
So it's just getting comfortable and running around and being wild, just attacking my feet at random times.
That's awesome. So what was your family structure like mom and dad, brothers and sisters, and what were they doing as you were growing up for a job?
I grew up with my dad and my grandmother. My dad and my mom had me pretty young, like 16 and 18.
Oh, okay.
They sort of split up and she went and did her own thing, and then my dad grew up just doing sort of odd in jobs until he kind of got into the medical field, and then he recently had a lot of health problems, so now he's disabled, and my grandmother's disabled too, and they kind of live together and take care of each other, and I just live in Gainesville.
Oh, but, wow.
Yeah, it was a good structure. I don't have really any issues.
Only child?
No, I have a sister.
Oh, okay. And so did you ever have contact with your mom subsequently, or was it one of those things where she just basically went off and obviously did her own thing and you weren't interested in that?
Not for a long time. And then she came back in and we talked, but it's, I don't know, nothing to really talk about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just
I'm not bitter or anything. It's just a,
right. She wasn't a part of your life. So there's no reason to overly invest in that relationship.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's weird because like my parents were divorced when I was young, and then you know, maintained contact with my father. But then there was like a 3 or 4 year period where I made a real conscious decision to basically be like, you know what, dude, you're still treating me like I'm 12 years old. And at that time, I was, you know, 19 or 20, and basically I just didn't speak to him for, you know, 2 or 3 years. And then you know, I basically got back in touch with him once I was planning on getting married. But it was real interesting to kind of readjust to a person. You know, that you're like, you like brought me into this world, and like it's weird to have to like try to manufacture a relationship.
Yeah, exactly. I don't really want to do that. I'm not ready to make that kind of effort, maybe in my later life.
Yeah, sure. And so would you kind of typify your experience growing up as kind of you know, idyllic sort of suburb type living, or is it one of those things that you guys were you know, kind of playing outside, getting in trouble in the swamps and stuff like that?
No swamps around, but sure. It was very rural. And yeah, that was about it. Played in the woods a lot. There was a lot of woods around, a lot of animals, a lot of places to get hurt, but I didn't, unfortunately.
Sure. Were you cautious?
Overly cautious. It's part of my issue.
Well, would you call that an issue, or would you call that, I guess, self-preservation in a way?
I guess I could call it that, yeah.
Right. I guess the positive way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I definitely notice where, you know, so many, and I'm sure you have a lot of friends like this as well, where it's like, you know, like, oh, I broke my arm, I did this and did that, like, you know, when you were younger. And I very much like you, I never, you know, I think I, like, got a really bad bloody nose once when I was playing flag football. But, like, other than that, I wasn't, you know, jumping off trees and doing stupid stuff because I was like, that'll hurt. Like, I can't do that.
Yeah, I had the same experience until I sort of got out of Newberry, started skateboarding and martial arts and that stuff. Never really broke a bone until then.
Oh, okay. So you would you say that you were a pretty active kid, it sounds like?
Yeah. Probably around 15 is when I got really active, which is when I met Corey, actually. He probably changed me for the worse. Corey's the guitar player.
Okay.
He and I are the only original members. We kind of met, and that's where music started.
And you you mentioned like karate and skateboarding and stuff like that. Was that all happening around that same time too?
Skateboarding around 15, yeah. I think that's what really developed me as a person. I think prior to skateboarding, I don't really think I had much of a personality. I'm just a really shy kid. Can't really give you any interests that I was into before 15. I mean, I played video games and normal stuff like that, but I didn't play a lot of video games. Like, I guess like that would be my thing I would say I did prior to skateboarding. But if you ask me about a game like 007 or something, I never played it. So I don't really know what I was doing up until 15. I was just there existing.
Well, that's interesting because I do think that is a that's kind of a common experience for a lot of people that, you know, you just kind of flow through and you don't really when you're not forced to like look at yourself, you just kind of sit there, you know, you're just like, oh, whatever. Yeah, I do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But then like once you if you're lucky enough to grab onto that one thing, then that kind of defines, you know, who you are at that point.
Like that quote facetious say that your second life starts whenever your first life ends.
Right.
Really hope mine didn't end at 15.
Right. No, that's interesting. I like that. And so what was it about skateboarding that really just kind of captured you?
Well, I lived not too far from the downtown portion of Newbury, but it was not advantageous to walk. It was always hot in Florida. It's just one temperature all one season, excuse me. And skateboarding, it made me able to go see friends. It was like a more of a mode of transportation rather than like a hobby. And then it sort of developed into a hobby and I kind of just built it from there. That's like what developed my, I think my friend group as well. Cause I mean, I went to a high school of like maybe 100-150, classmates or maybe a same year, maybe it was 400 for the high school. But I think that's what connected me with other people before music. And then that kind of evolved into music. The same friends that were skateboarding got into music and then kind of fell into it. Yeah.
That's a really small high school. Was it just because of the location or was it like a private religious based?
Just location. I mean, okay. 4 years, probably each grade had about 100-150 kids.
Got
so
it.
You knew everybody's name.
Right. Yeah. Cause I mean, I went to a school rough, maybe a little bit bigger, but the main reason was because it was a like a Lutheran high school. So it was private, obviously. So therefore you're going to get smaller class sizes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I find that it is very interesting when you go to that small of a school and you basically know what everybody's thing is, you know, like everybody, you know, it's not like you can kind of look at the lunchroom and see whatever where everyone's sitting and you know, kind of classify them like that. You're just like, oh no, that person, not only are they like a, you know, whatever, a indoor kid, but like they're super into Dungeons and Dragons and like, you know, like more details than you would ever know at a large high school.
Yeah, exactly. Like stereotypes are very relevant.
Right. Did you find because there was a smaller school that you kind of had a larger group of friends to kind of you know, filter in and out of, or was it you kind of stuck to your main people?
Main people. Which was some of the guys I started the band with and most of the friends that I still have now, which is kind of interesting. Some of them moved away, but a good portion of them are still here. No new friends.
Right. That's interesting that you've held on to many of your high school friends.
Yeah, I met Corey when I was, it was either 16 or 17. He was wearing a Dragon Force shirt. And I thought that was interesting. I've never listened to Dragon Force, but I just thought the design on the t-shirt was interesting. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of stayed friends since.
That's awesome. And so was Frameworks basically started in high school, or was that later on?
That was a little later on. Corey started a band with other musicians. I wasn't a musician at all. I actually applied for guitar as my main elective every single year I was in high school, and they wouldn't give it to me. I don't know for what reason, but they always put me in like a gym class or some kind of like electronic learning, like Photoshop and Illustrator. But every year it was my number one pick for an elective because all of my friends were in it and I never got it. And then Corey started bands with people who actually were musicians. And then I just hung out every day when they were practicing to the point where he was like, hey man, you want to try keyboard or something? I don't know. What can we give you? And he let me join their band with no working knowledge of music at all at like 15 or 16. And that's kind of how it developed. And then he kept playing bands. I think I stopped like at 18. Because I mean, how far can you really go with keyboard?
Right. Sure. Especially if you, like you said, you didn't have any proclivity to play that beforehand.
Yeah, I was only playing because friends were playing. And then his band prior to Frameworks, the one immediately prior, the vocalist quit like a week before they were about to go record. And it was like a shitty metal band that I'll never say the name of in public, so they can't be referenced. But
okay.
Like a week before they were about to go record. And I don't know why, but Corey was like, hey man, you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, I guess I'll do it. And it didn't fit my personality at all, because I'm not a front man by any means. I'm not very articulate, and I don't have a lot of ideas that I wanted to express in the songs at 17. But for some reason I said yes, and then I like freaked out the next week, because it was already paid for, and we did it, and it was humiliating. And then we kind of just stayed together, and we started Frameworks like maybe a year or two after. Okay. So we really just fell into it, and we never stopped doing it.
Right. Well, yeah, you definitely, granted, I've never seen you guys perform live, but in just kind of speaking to you now and kind of, you know, seeing what the projections that you put outward, you definitely strike me as the quote unquote reluctant front man, where it's not like you were a person who is like, okay, I seriously can't wait to get in front of a bunch of people and like be the center of attention. So walk me through that process. Like, obviously, once you started to do it, obviously through practice, I'm sure you became more comfortable, but was it one of those things that you were just like, I don't know if I'm ever going to get over this?
Yeah, I don't. I haven't.
Okay, you're still in that same mind space?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, I like that, though. I guess an unarticulate way to say it is that it keeps me on my toes. I really appreciate it because I've been able to do it for so long, but it doesn't ever wash over. I get up there and I'm like, oh, all these people are here to watch our band. This is an interesting thing. How did I get here? Still to this day, I wouldn't say I'm as shy getting up there, but it still just passes my mind every time. Like, how did I get here?
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire, and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit BetterHelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
What am I doing up here?
Right. So did you have a plan kind of, matriculating through high school that you wanted to do something from a career oriented standpoint, or was your, father encouraging you to do anything, or was it just kind of like, well, I'll figure it out eventually?
He wanted me to go into nursing, or he wanted me to be a nurse or some kind of medical degree right after college, right before we started Three Marks. And we got into an argument about it because I wanted to go into graphic design, but that was out of his knowledge. He didn't really understand what graphic design was. He didn't really use a computer, so he didn't really know anything about it. So he was like, no, that's a really terrible idea. There's a future in that. Don't do that. And he really pushed me to go into some kind of nursing degree. And I said no, so I just didn't go to college. Just dropped out the first semester. And then Corey dropped out as well. And we're like, why don't we just start another band and do that? And we set a few goals to tour and do all that stuff. And we kind of just really just never stopped doing it. It's so strange to say, but we didn't have very high expectations. We didn't really want to be rock stars or anything weird like that. We just were like, yo, let's play music. Let's go see the country. And then it just hasn't stopped.
Yeah, I like that, because this was actually something I was going to mention a little bit later that I've noticed in a couple other interviews that you did. And I love this idea because I personally identify with it. I approached all of the projects that I ever did from a musical standpoint of never obviously trying to make a living out of this thing, but basically just a collection of experiences. You've mentioned in previous interviews that you basically use tour to obviously see stuff, to experience different cities and all that sort of that process. But then never having the notion that this is like, okay, this is my future plan. You know, I can't wait to do this to where I'm going to be able to, quit everything and tour, from a real, real full-time perspective. So it sounds like that was basically just the core of your being, that you were just going to tour to kind of collect these experiences.
Yeah. I mean, we were very naive about it. We weren't opposed to the idea. Like, we got offered to play Warped Tour once, and we did it, and we had a terrible experience, but I mean, we still did it. We were pretty naive about everything in our very early years, but we knew that the only thing we really wanted to do was play music and see some stuff, mostly the country and what have you, because we were from very small towns, and that was the main goal, and what happened outside of that was just extra.
All right, I am so damn excited about this sponsor. I'm just bursting with enthusiasm for this. And I promise, I'm not just being a shill. They sent me some free product, but okay, hold on, let me back this up. So Soylent, you may or may not have heard of this product, but basically what it is a meal replacement. I wouldn't even call it a shake, but just a drink. So basically what it is recognized by the FDA as a food. It is a complete meal in a bottle. It is convenient and a healthy alternative to fast, which is basically like, you know, when you fast, you don't eat food. So Soylent, it's the most convenient thing I have ever seen. And now let me be abundantly clear in the fact that I like food. I like to eat food. But there are many times where I find where it's like, you know, I'm in the middle of some work or everyone's super busy. And rather than, you know, grabbing, you know, some nutrition bar that is full of things that aren't necessarily the best for you, Soylent is so goddamn perfect that it just blows my mind. And that's why I'm so excited about it. So basically, I'll kind of walk you through this. It's not a diet replacement. It is not a weight loss product, or it's not a supplement or a protein shake. It is a nutritionally complete meal. And it's like, are you kidding me? There's 400 calories in this thing. There's 20 grams of protein, 20% of all daily macro and micronutrient requirements based on a normal 2000 calorie diet. And there's no animal products. It's vegan. And that's what I love as well. So basically, this thing is cruelty-free. It's amazing for you to just grab from the refrigerator, drink. This stuff, the best way that I can describe it is it has kind of the consistency of pancake mix, but not as thick. And it has this, it's slightly sweet, but not so overwhelming where you're just like, oh man. So it's kind of like almond milk in a way. And man, it is so, so good. So basically, this has replaced my lunches. This straight up, I do not have lunch anymore. And granted, of course, if I am like dining out with a client or something like that, of course, I'm not going to be a weirdo and have my shake there. But, you know, or my Soylent, that's how I should appropriately put it. But trust me, this stuff will blow your mind. So what you need to do is go to Soylent, Soylent.com/100words using the number. And you're going to get 50% off your first case of Soylent 2.0 with this subscription. So trust me, you're going to try it. You're going to fall in love with it. Your mind is going to become clear because you're not sitting there like, tell me, how terrible is it when you're like, all right, I want something to eat. And you spend like half an hour to 45 minutes figuring out what it is your body desires or your brain desires. This is basically just like, oh, no, I know what I'm going to have. Like right now, I am craving Soylent. I know it's going to sound weird, but in 25 minutes, I'm going to go grab one from my upstairs kitchen, have it for lunch, and boom, done. Moving on with my day and loving the taste of it. So there you go. Visit Soylent.com/100words and you will get 50% off your first case of Soylent 2.0 with a subscription. So please do it up and I promise you will enjoy it. Interesting. So you got to walk me through, just because you put it there, the obviously playing Warped Tour. Did you do like multiple dates, or was it just one of those things you played one date and you were like, oh my gosh, this is a rough go at it?
It's such great timing because after our fourth show, we got an email from Victory Records and they're like, hey, come play Chicago for us. Huh. And it was this guy named Leif, and he's a really good friend of mine now. He was like, yeah, why don't you guys just come out and we'll see what happens. And we're like, well, we don't know if Victory is where we'd want to be. We haven't really thought about a record label. We're like six shows in. But I mean, it's a good excuse to go to Chicago. Because, you know, when you put sort of like a date on something, it, as far as traveling, if you put a date on it, you're more likely to do it rather than not starting. So we're like, why don't we just go to Chicago and see what happens? And it was a miserable experience doing the showcase for Victory. It was just like really bright lights. And just like six, maybe eight people watched us. And they didn't like us. They said we weren't marketable at all. And but that guy, Leif, he stayed in contact. And I think he felt bad or whatever. But he was like, yeah, well, let me see what I can help you guys with. Maybe I can just like help you guys in a direction or something. And he was like, what if I sign you guys up for Ernie Battle of the Bands? And I was like, you don't do that, man. Don't worry about it. I don't know if Warped Tour would be really our thing. Not in a pretentious way. It's just that none of us really went to Warped Tour very much, which is kind of strange because I think a lot of bands that we liked were playing Warped Tour, but we just didn't really go. And he signed us up for it because I didn't want to be mean or rude and say no. And we won. And we, because it's in the course of maybe 2 or 3 months, we forgot that he signed us up, and we got the email like a week before we were supposed to play, or maybe we saw it a week before, and maybe we got the next email that was like, hey, are you guys going to do this or not? But I remember it was like a week before, and we're like, I guess we'll go do it. And we probably shouldn't say this, but we sold the two additional tickets for the merch guy and what have you that come with winning.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
For gas money to get up there. And we played the show. We were like the second band at like maybe 11 o'clock. It was really early. And all of our friends that were going to Warped Tour were there. But the sound guy was really rude to us. He was really, really rude. We sound checked, and I was cupping the mic. I do this because I'm really afraid of chipping my teeth on the mic. So I'll cup it so my finger will block the mic from hitting my teeth. And I was cupping it. And he stopped me while we were sound checking. He was like, hey, man, you're cupping the mic. That's not how mics work. And I was like, whoa, okay, I'll try to not do that. And then first song in, I kind of forgot, and I started cupping it again, and he just turned me down. And then after the first song, everybody was like, hey, we can't hear the vocals. So I asked him, I was like, hey, do you think you could turn me up? And then he just, over all the speakers, he was like, hey, man, that's not how you use a mic. You can't cup it. And I was like, oh, okay. So then he didn't turn me up, and we finished a song or two. And I said, hey, thanks for Frameworks. And he would, over the speakers again, he was like, wait, you guys are done? You played for 10 minutes. And I was like, yeah, thanks. And he was like, this is Warped Tour and you're going to play for 10 minutes? And I was like, yeah, see you later. And that was it. And we never thought about it again.
That's, I mean, especially coming from not having any real expectations of what the thing was. It wasn't like you were, you know, pinning all your hopes and dream on this, and then to have a bad experience, you're just like, oh yeah, well, we don't need that. And like you said, not in a pretentious way, but just in a, oh yeah, this isn't what we signed up for.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, obviously, because like you said that you didn't, you know, attend Warped Tour, obviously have any experiences with that. What was kind of your sort of, you know, introductory points to independent music? Like, was, you know, were you more a hardcore kid? Did you kind of get in through metal, or what was your gateway, so to speak?
I had this teacher in the 10th grade. His name was Greg Newburn. It actually goes like a weird full circle, because Greg Newburn got into music, like hot water music, when he attended UF, when he was about my age now, I think so. And the reason he got into this kind of music was because of my current boss, Jonathan Hamilton. He got him into the music, and then Greg Newburn got a job as a teacher at my high school in Newberry. And he would like bring in his iPod every day, and I would kind of just scroll through music and see weird names like American Football. I'd go, what the hell is this? I would just check that out, and that's kind of how it developed. I remember he said Howard Music is the best band in the world, and I was like, oh, well, it must be really good, because it was in the 10th grade. And that's when I realized that they were from Gainesville, and then it all connected, the fest. And as soon as I was old enough to go to the fest, that's where like it kind of started.
Hey, so it was basically just you kind of ransacking someone's digital music collection and being like, oh, this sounds like an interesting band name.
Yeah, I kind of started from there, and then just associated acts, and yeah.
Sure. And so you mentioned American Football. Do you recall any of the other ones that kind of popped out that you glommed onto recently or initially?
Earth Crisis.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
You couldn't get more polar opposite. You got American Football on one end and Earth Crisis on the other end.
Yeah.
did you philosophically start attaching yourself to things when you were, you know, realizing that obviously there was a scene, so to speak? You know, did anything stand out to you that you cared about?
Yeah, I don't know exactly where that started, but to say when I involved myself with a scene or the scene that was happening in Gainesville, but there was some pivotal point. I can't recall it. I just remember the first show I ever went to was this band called Against All Authority.
Of course.
And I don't remember who they played with, but that was the first show. And then I think I just slowly started going to more shows, and then it sort of adopted as my identity over skateboarding with all the bands and stuff. And that's kind of what happened. I don't think I have a very clear answer on how I got into the Gainesville scene.
Sure.
Because it's so peculiar to any other scene that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I agree. Especially too, I do, as an outsider observing Gainesville in general, I do think it's more welcoming, in the sense of like there's obviously a hodgepodge of different bands that none of them sound alike. You know, it's like you have a band like, you know, Ass Suck, and then you have a band like, you know, obviously like Against All Authority and Hot Water Music. Like, you know, you could be more polar opposite sonically, but then at the same time, it's like you do see that certain types of bands aren't necessarily not welcome, but just sonically it's like you weren't seeing a bunch of like, you know, whatever, Victory Records old school hardcore bands starting in Gainesville, Florida, you know, just because it didn't seem like that scene supported it, you know.
Yeah, it's still the same way where you won't see many hardcore bands coming through. Yeah, it has like a, Gainesville has a particular taste, and if you're not a part of that taste, then coming through is almost pointless. Maybe not pointless, because you can sightsee and have you of Gainesville, but unless you fit into whatever niche that the certain amount of people are into here, you won't see very much. It's so strange. I guess it's really not that strange, but like what's a good example of a band? Like Torch does really well here. Mm-hmm. And then a band like, I guess any fest band will also do really well here. Not that they're that much different, but that kind of categorizes the bands that do well here.
Right. Well, and you definitely see bands that, you know, like a band like Iron Cheek, where it's like, you know, they would play out here in Southern California and they would do well. You know, they'd have like 150, 200 kids show up to a show, and that, and, you know, those kids would be very engaged and excited about it. But then Iron Cheek could play the fest at Gainesville, and you're just like, Jesus Christ, there's like 800 plus people here. It's insane. Yeah. You know? So it's like, I do see exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. It's cool.
Yeah, it's great. And so then as you obviously started to play out more so under the context of Frameworks, I guess, did you feel a part of the scene, or was it one of those things that you guys were just kind of, you know, doing your own thing and obviously trying to create, you know, some momentum for yourself outside of the context of that scene?
Well, we immediately started touring for a good 2 years most of the people involved in the Gainesville scene didn't even know what our band were. I say that in a strange way. What I mean is most people that booked shows in Gainesville and I guess relevant bands that aren't Hot Water Music, they didn't know who we were at all, just because we instantly just started touring or trying to tour. And then we'd book what shows we wanted to play, but we weren't really that active and hopping on like I guess other bigger shows. Like if there was a tour package coming in, we weren't trying to get on it. We were kind of just trying to do our own thing. But we knew, I understood pretty early that in order for us to get booked in like Savannah, that we probably have to have some kind of connection, and to build that connection, we probably have to book them in your town first. So we only played shows that what's a good example? Sorry, I'm getting a little twisted here. Like the Chariot would come through all the time.
Okay.
And we didn't see a purpose of playing that shows with them after the first time. Because, I mean, like, they weren't going to take us on tour or anything like that. They weren't going to book us in Atlanta. So after the first maybe two times, we were like, all right, well, we're not going to do that anymore. That's probably a really shitty way to word that. I probably shouldn't have said that.
No. Luke, you're very hard on yourself.
Yeah.
Have you been accused of that before?
Yes.
Okay.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM, let's create.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
But I mean, I see the point you're trying to make, where it's like, the if you felt like obviously you were just jumping on a a local show from a band coming through, you weren't necessarily using that as a jumping off point to trade shows or like, you know, become best friends with the band or whatever.
It was
I get that. I totally see where you're coming from, because then it's like, if you do it again and again without that sort of motive inside of you, you're not going to have any real reason to play to those same people that are attending that same show.
Absolutely. We didn't really want to play a local show that didn't have a purpose behind it, really. I mean, I'm still down for an all local show in Gainesville, but I don't want to play a show that's not in support of something that I think is cool. And that was kind of the mentality we always had when we started, unless there was like some point to the show helping somebody that we liked, then we really didn't want to do it. And that disconnected us for a very long time with most of the locals in Gainesville, which is, I don't know, it's been a weird thing.
Sure. And so, like you said, you started to basically just tour immediately and play, obviously, as many shows as you possibly could with the limited means that I'm sure you had. Like, were you basically just booking shows through, obviously, the social networks and stuff like that?
Yeah. It was right when I think Facebook switched over to its band page, which is a really weird time because it was like right when MySpace went down, and then Facebook altered just having one Facebook to Facebook and pages. So we were right in the middle of that, and we kind of just hopped on any show we could get on and made friends with whoever we could. Kind of just carried us.
Sure. When did you feel like, I guess, some people started to pay attention to what you were doing, from either obviously releasing your music or just the fact that you started to have pockets of people being like, oh yeah, we just drew 40 kids here and like we weren't expecting that?
That's a good question. I don't know if I can depict when it was. It might have been maybe 3 or 4 tours in where actually booking the tour wasn't like pulling teeth and desperately trying to convince a friend to book us. So I probably then, but right. I think I can pick like a single moment where I was like, oh, this is working.
Right. Sure. Well, I like that. The idea of working, you know, because obviously it's so different for so many people, because all you do is like, you know, if it's working for one band is like, you know, getting, like you said, getting a show booked. You're like, that's working. Like, hey, it works. Like, we're going to play in Denver. But then obviously for bands of a different level, working is like, oh yeah, well now we can headline there and play in front of 400 people and sell out that local venue. So it's all, I guess it's all a matter of perspective.
I've thought for a long time that we set our goals very small. The goal was to release a full length on a label that we liked and see the country a few times. Mm-hmm. And we did it pretty early. And after that, we're like, well, what do we do now? I guess we'll repeat it.
Right. I guess we'll do it again. It sounds like, too, the way that you structured your band is like, obviously, you guys, you know, tour as much as you can within the context of, you know, not killing yourselves and obviously being able to, you know, sustain yourself on, you know, whatever meager income the band makes versus obviously the day jobs that you hold. But is your life basically structured around the idea of like, hey, we could tour at any time because we all have transient type jobs?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is.
And you attend bar, right?
No. Well, that's like a side job. That job is mainly because we tour. It's just kind of like a little extra money. But my main job is I work at a screen printing shop during the day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And they're pretty flexible when I want to leave. And everybody else works in restaurants, I believe. Actually, one of the guitar players works with me. That isn't Corey. His name's Bobby. And then Corey, Wyatt work in restaurants. And Matt, I don't know what Matt does. He has a very strange life.
He puts it together.
Yeah, he makes it work.
Right.
He also lives in South Florida, so it's not like he's immediately around to see what he's doing.
Right. And so, just in gathering from the conversation that we've been having here, and like I said, you know, the other sources of output that you put out there in yourself, you're a pretty pensive guy. Like you strike me as the sort of guy who's, you know, very reflective on a lot of things that you do. Does it, and obviously, like I joked earlier, where you sound like you're pretty hard on yourself. Where does that kind of come from? Because it's, obviously not everybody has that sort of inclination to either, you know, go inward or obviously be difficult on yourself. So where do you think those kind of threads come from?
I don't know if I was always like that. I don't think I was always this hard on myself, but since I guess maybe frameworks, I just knew that I wanted to do as much as I could, and I didn't want to have warm feelings about anything. I either want it to be hot or cold. I want to really, really care about it, or I want to not think about it. And that's kind of what drives me. Either I want to go 100% something or not go at it. I guess that's kind of it.
Sure. And so then obviously when you decide to put yourself out there in regards to writing lyrics that are obviously, you know, introspective and obviously looking for some sense of connection, not to people on the outside, but obviously connection within yourself, and especially because of the style of music that you play as well, which is, you know, whatever, post-hardcore, emotive hardcore, whatever the hell you want to call it, doesn't matter. The terrain is fraught with obviously people connecting with your band on a very deep level, and then obviously they put a lot of stuff on you, not in a bad way, but just in a positive way, in the sense of people really gravitate towards bands that obviously do the sort of thing that you guys do. Have you had to kind of reckon with that personally, in regards to people putting a lot of whatever interpretations they have on your plate and kind of, you know, trying to unpack that?
Not at all. I mean, personally, the songs are pretty selfish. We don't really write songs for anybody else. We kind of just, the writing process is we just write and that's it. If somebody doesn't like it, then that's fine. If they do, that's better. But if somebody's able to put some kind of different meaning on a song, that's also a bonus. I don't intend to make songs sound vague. I mean, if you read over it, sometimes you're just like, what the fuck is he talking about? But I intentionally don't try to spell it out, just because it wasn't for anybody else to really completely understand it. I'm really open to answering any question, but yeah, I guess that's it.
Got it. And obviously kind of sonically, a lot of people try to, you know, peg you down in regards to like, oh yeah, you guys belong to this scene, or you guys do this, like, you know, you're too heavy for emo, and like almost every interview obviously discusses that idea. Obviously the path that you guys have chosen in regards to, like, you know, working with Top Shelf and then obviously now working with Death Wish, clearly it doesn't matter to you guys, but obviously in order to you know, basically find other like-minded bands for you guys to like tour with and play with and all that sort of stuff, you know, there does need to be some sort of delineation and decisions made on that front. Or are you guys basically just like, well, if we're friends with them, that's all we really care about as far as touring partners are concerned?
It's sort of both. I mean, we're opposed to touring with anybody that we think has sort of the same mindset that we think we can get along with. We probably wouldn't say no to anybody if we liked them. But as far as like the Top Shelf Death Wish switch, we always found that we were too heavy for the emo kids and then too soft for the hardcore kids. And it felt like when we went with Death Wish, it meant that we were leaning more towards the hardcore side. And if you drive it strictly down, I would say the hardcore side is me, and then the softer side is Corey, and then the music is where we both of our personalities meet. But switching over to Death Wish kind of sealed that in.
Right. Well, it set your path a little more firmly, where it's like, okay, we know that I guess our bread and butter isn't exactly touring with Top Shelf exact like bands, because like you said, the you were too heavy for those type of people. I'm painting with a very broad brush here, mind you.
Yeah. So there wasn't like a no, you can't do this, but it was just we did it a few times, and not everybody liked us, which is fine. But I thought it was cool to try something a little different. Maybe if we went in a little bit of a different direction, anything to not make it boring, I guess.
Right, and so it sounds like there is a kind of underlying thing of maybe not so much from the band overall, but you like to make yourself uncomfortable to, like you said, to kind of keep yourself on your toes. Is that accurate in regards to kind of not only obviously the artistic endeavors that you do, but in your own personal life as well?
I've started to think so lately. I like to put, I don't like to, but I find that I put myself in uncomfortable places and then kind of deal with it. Like I'm terribly afraid of heights. And I started really liking roller coasters. I hate being high up and being upside down, but for some reason, I like the thrill of it. I don't know what that is, but same thing with martial arts. I hate confrontation, but I really enjoy that kind of stuff.
Interesting. like you were mentioning earlier, in regards to your father and your grandmother essentially like taking care of one another, what sort of disability did your father have, and like how is that I presume that's obviously affected you and your relationship with him?
One of the discs in his neck, or his neck and back meat, dissolved, so that nerves were rubbing together, and it caused really terrible headaches, and to the point where he either couldn't drive or stand or lift stuff. I mean, he could function. It just really hurt when he did. Uh-huh. And that started happening, and he got misdiagnosed a few times, and then he eventually had a heart attack. And he eventually found a doctor that was like, oh, this is obviously the problem. And then they now give him treatments that pretty much numb the nerves around it, so that when they are rubbing together, it doesn't give him a severe headache. And then from there, he was able to kind of figure it out. So that's really what's going on.
Got it. Was it a was it one of those things that you were doing everything you obviously could to try to, you know, help him go through it? Or was it difficult for you to watch him as he was struggling to find a proper diagnosis?
Yes and no. I wasn't doing everything I could because, I mean, I was obviously touring a lot. I was on tour when he had his heart attack as well. But I did everything I could. It was such a weird feeling because while we were on tour and I found out that he had the heart attack, I didn't necessarily feel good, but I didn't feel like I was doing the wrong thing by not being, I guess, with him when he had the heart attack, which was put me in a weird position where I felt like I was doing a good thing and a bad thing, which is what a lot of the record's about. I'm not there, but I'm not completely upset that I'm not there.
Do you think that's kind of a... I mean, obviously, that feeling is very, I guess, from an outward perspective, selfish. but at the same time, like, there, you know, I guess technically, what could you probably do if you were there?
Yes. So when he had the heart attack, there was no lead up to that because he had a disc disease that just dissolved the disc in his back. Where if I would have known that it was something that could have really been not just detrimental, but I guess. That could have taken his life, I would have been on tour. But just because we thought we understood what was going on with the discs just dissolving, I felt like if I was there, I would just be helping him do, I guess, normal activities, which didn't really seem that pertinent to me being there. And I think he understood that as well. He understands that I'm doing what I want to do, and I don't think he would have it any other way. So it doesn't feel selfish, but if I would have known that what he was going to go through happened, I would have been there.
Right, right. Yeah, look, yeah, retroactively, you would be able to look at it and be like, okay, this would have been meaningful. But, you know, if you felt like obviously everything was under control, it's like, well, there's not much I could do.
Yeah. I mean, the same thing could happen again, and I'm not going to actively just stop touring and go live with him again.
Right.
Just kind of piecing it together.
Sure. Does he understand obviously what you do, considering the fact he was obviously pushing you to a sort of practical career? Has he, I guess, made peace with the fact that you've obviously pursued this path, or is it still kind of a little tense when you have those discussions on, like, are you still doing the band thing, Luke? Like, come on, what is this dropping?
Well, yeah, we had a, not a fallout, but we didn't see eye to eye whenever I decided to not go to college. But I reapplied myself to a different degree, and I've been doing that for a little while, so we're pretty good. After I did that, I think it made sense to him that that's the hobby, and it never was intentionally to be a career. But I couldn't do school and it at the same time to the degree that I wanted to.
Right.
So now that I'm gonna, I take classes online so that we can tour. He kind of understands that a lot better to the extent that he can understand.
Right, right, right. What are you studying online?
Computer sciences, computer programming and analysis.
Nice. Has that interest kind of always been there, and you've just been able to focus in on it now?
Yeah, I think so. It kind of derives back to, as shitty as it sounds, MySpace and designing themes in HTML and CSS. I really liked that for some reason, that and the design aspect, and I don't know, it just developed over the years, and I thought about it for a good 2 or 3 years before actually taking classes, and it never went away, so I was like, well, I obviously should just do this then and stop overthinking it. So I have, like, probably a year left, and then figure out the next part of my life.
Nice, nice. Well, I mean, you obviously, it sounds like the graphic design part of your life as well was something that you were interested in, so you could easily see how those two can intertwine with one another.
Yeah.
And so then kind of like you were mentioning earlier, I think it's very interesting that obviously the goals that you set forth for the band are obviously very minimal and I guess easily obtained, and not in like a self-defeating or a self-deprecating manner. So now obviously the fact that, you know, you're working with Deathwish, and obviously there's, you know, a larger set of eyeballs to what you guys are doing. Do you basically still have those same sort of ideas where it's just like, okay, that'd be cool if we could like do a little bit larger tour, or like we could do this, or do you kind of have, more ambition, and not meaning like you guys are lazy right now, but more ambition now that because of this, this relationship?
Yeah. I mean, we did have to realign our goals, and I don't think we've really talked about it since. When Corey and I started the band, we kind of, defined what we wanted to do, and once we did it, we never really talked about it again. But I think that without us saying it, we know what we want to do. We want to just continue doing it, making friends, and seeing other parts of the world outside of the country, and then just seeing what we can do. That's really it. We're not putting a label on it. We're kind of just doing it, which I think is the only way our band can work. If we try to, he and I have polar opposite personalities, so if I try to define every step that we do, he'll lose interest. So we kind of have to meet in the middle where, well, let's sort of do this, or yeah, that's kind of where we meet.
Interesting. It sounds like, from the way that you're describing it too, like, because obviously every band needs to have some sort of a business-minded person. Are you that person? To me, it doesn't sound like it, but I could be completely misreading that situation.
Yeah, I am. I didn't want to be, but.
Luke, you just get thrust in these positions of responsibility that you're not really interested in.
Or maybe it's my personality to think that I got thrown into them.
Or on that same note, it's something you are challenging yourself, where you're putting yourself in uncomfortable situations and trying to figure your way out of them.
Yeah, that could be it. I do like puzzles.
That's been like, were you basically the person like booking shows and kind of, you know, doing basically everything from a business perspective of the band?
Yeah, I mean, Corey had his part, but music is mostly his part, writing the music, and then I would say the unfortunate business part, it was my part. So being responsible for making sure the tour is happening. But I mean, if he had a show that he could book, he would do it. I guess there wasn't an assigned role per se, but we did what we did. Yeah, he wrote the music and I tried to do the other part.
Right. You tried to deliver the goods on the other end.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you definitely, you need one person that obviously it tries to kind of, you know, be ambitious or funnel that productivity in some fashion. Because otherwise, yeah, you obviously never even get to play a show in the first place.
Yeah.
And then the last kind of thing I want to hit on was the notion that, again, kind of, you know, whatever, looking at your lyrics and obviously looking at the themes of what you've been trying to, I guess, capture in all the recorded music you've put out. It's very, it's obviously, like you said, it's very straightforward. And I don't mean that in a bad way. But the idea that you are trying to convey this a sense of isolation in some capacity, is that something where you just really like that, theme and topic, because it kind of does, you know, obviously pop up in differing aspects of what you're doing. Obviously I haven't heard the new record, but, I don't know if there's any themes on that you're pulling in there. It just seems like that's kind of the umbrella that you're operating under, and not like you're a one trick pony and that's all you speak about, but that just seems to be a kind of a prevailing theme. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, I mean, it's unintentional, but I think that's just what I thought was interesting to write about, and kind of went with it. The new record is a little bit different, though. It's just strictly experiences and my reflection on them, rather than our first album was just a whole concept album. So I just did the opposite. I thought it would be interesting, but I would say that unintentionally that does happen.
Sure. I mean, it does, especially when you are able to obviously release multiple things, it's difficult to kind of separate yourself from obviously the stuff that you first do when you're, you know, 15, 16 years old. Like, you can easily separate yourself from that because usually it's pretty terrible, lyrically speaking. But then once you, you know, have an identity and you start to, understand yourself more, you really do kind of always go back to the same, you know, one or two wells of like, well, this is what I'm still interested in, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's, I really appreciate you hanging out. This was, fun for me, and I hope it wasn't too uncomfortable for you.
No, not at all. It was a lot easier than I thought it would. You're really good at this, so.
Oh, look at you. You're paying me compliments. Luke. What a nice chap. Nice discussion. I don't know why I call him chap, because obviously he's not from England, and I tend to call people chaps that are from England. But anyways, thank you very much, Luke, and thank you very much, Stephanie, my amazing friend, who does great work as far as PR is concerned. And she always hooks it up for us. You know, she takes care of the show. She's a previous guest of the show. She just, enjoys the experience of giving us cool people to talk to. And when I say us, I always like, it's the collective us, you know, basically it's you, it's me, it's everyone else who listens to this show. That's what I say when I mean us, because like realistically, it's just me producing and editing the show and then you, the consumer. But so that's that. And the guest next week is a very exciting one. And I know all of these are exciting. They're all like my own children in some weird way, even though I have a child and maybe that's a bad analogy. But Brad Boatwright, he is from a band called From Ashes Rise. And he also works under the moniker Audio Siege when it comes to production, mastering, anything in regards to recording. So I feel like I'm going to have the pressure on me when he's listening to the episode to be like, oh, man, this thing sounds like shit. You should totally be doing a better job at this. But hopefully he will, he'll understand that I'm nowhere near as good as he is at what he does. So anyways, that's next week. And, like I said, I'll be in Portland next week, but I will be posting the episode on Wednesday as usual. So, we have some even more exciting conversations coming up, some interviews I'm doing next week for episodes later in August and early September, man. There's some fun stuff coming up. So, and always, please visit the show's website, 100wordspodcast.com, and then please support our sponsors. We have some pretty cool ones coming up, and the more you support them, either by buying their product, by checking out their service, whatever it is, even if it's just clicking on a link, do it up, because it really helps the show move along. So, that's that, and please, be safe, everybody.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.